This evening, we shall consider the seven deadly sins. Now, these are not the traditional Catholic list of cardinal sins, which are lust, gluttony, greed, sloth, wrath, envy, and pride. But nevertheless, the sins that we see in this passage are indeed deadly because they are the sins, they are the characteristics of a very deadly man. And who is that deadly man? The scoundrel. Now, last week we considered the characteristics of the sluggard. Today we want to focus on the characteristics of the scoundrel. So if you wanted to, you could really entitle today's message, "Who is the Scoundrel?" Now, let us remember that the Proverbs are divine instructions given to us. And here we get the picture of a little boy being raised on a farm. He's learning from his parents how to be wise, whom to trust, whom to be wary of, and how to be industrious. And here he receives instruction on how to be hardworking, how to go to the ant. I'm sure in a farm, every time he's sitting on a bench or on a log, he would see ants busily running around trying to do the work. And his parents, or the wise man, the father, instructs him on how now to identify a scoundrel. And there are two main lessons for that little boy. Firstly, be aware of the tactics of the scoundrel. And secondly, God hates the root sins that give rise to such wickedness. Firstly, be aware of the tactics of the scoundrel. And secondly, God hates the root sins that give rise to such crookedness. One thing that I've often experienced, not just in my personal life, but also in seeing the many Christians that I've been blessed to know, and what I've seen is that oftentimes we are very, very naive. Of course, I've had the privilege to meet some very streetwise Christians who truly understand the characteristics of people and wicked people. But most Christians tend to be very foolish and very trusting. But yet, we know that the scriptures are supposed to make us wise in this regard. But far too many of us are duped. Far too many of us are too trusting, especially Christians. We heed Christ's instructions to be gentle as doves, to be harmless, but we forget to be as wise as serpents. Now, serpents are wise for what particular reason? Because they stay away from danger. They don't leave themselves exposed to it. If there's a snake on the road and you happen to be walking, the snake would most likely shuffle away or slither away because they have no legs. But unfortunately, the Christian, we oftentimes let people cheat us, either because we're not wise enough or because we want to be nice guys. And that's why Proverbs 6 gives us a warning about this scoundrel, about his tactics, so that we can be aware of them. That's the first point. Now, we're told in verse 12 that he is a naughty person and a wicked man. Now, the word naughty, it's a very interesting word. We look at it and we think a naughty boy, but the word actually conveys a meaning that far surpasses what we think of a naughty boy. The word naughty here is the word Belial, which we had read in 2 Corinthians chapter 6. And it means useless, worthless. Nothing good can come out of this man. He's not useful to society, and very often he sucks the wealth and the energy and the industriousness from other people. It is no surprise that this follows the description of the sluggard. And such a person is described as wicked. And the word wicked literally means crooked. It means filled with iniquity. It describes someone who is unable to straighten himself out. He's a crook. He's a con man. So what are we warned about him? We're told that he has a froward mouth. In other words, his speech is distorted. He lies. He tricks people. Maybe he'll tell people that he may owe money. Oh, are you sure you didn't receive the check? Because the check is in the mail. Or, I don't have money right now. I'll pay you back in a week's time. But in a week's time, he doesn't pay you back. His speech is crooked. But more than that, we find that he winks with his eyes, he signals with his feet, he points with his fingers. Now, these are interesting idioms here. What do these things mean? It gives the impression that as a con man, he uses his eyes, his hands, his feet to deceive others, whether it be through sleight of hand or through other such subtleties. Now, most gangs will use hand gestures and hand signs to identify their gang and as a form of communication. Hand signs are also used to flash a warning or a threat to rival gangs. And some gangs have elaborate hand and body gestures so advanced that they can have complete conversations without even saying a word. Now, the point of this is not to say that every scoundrel you meet will be a gangbanger or someone who knows sign language well, but it's to make the point that such a person can be very convincing. He is very slick. He is very smooth. But he is not to be trusted. Why? Because he is a crooked man. He's crooked in all his actions because he is crooked at heart. Verse 14 tells us that frowardness is in his heart, and he devises mischief continually. Now, as with a sluggard, no one, when he is young, wants to become a crook. No one becomes a crook overnight, and certainly no one here, even believers, are spared from having these characteristics. But a person becomes a Belial, he becomes to embody this wickedness because he doesn't deal with his sin nature. And that's what Ephesians 4, 17 to 19 say. Ephesians 4, 17 and 19, and this is what they say. This I say therefore, and testify in the Lord, that ye henceforth walk not as other Gentiles walk, in the vanity of their mind, having the understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God through the ignorance that is in them, because of the blindness of their heart. Now you see the frowardness talking about here, but it goes on to say, who being past feeling have given themselves over unto lasciviousness, to work all uncleanness with greediness. Now, everyone has the characteristics of the scoundrel, but we as believers, we try and remove ourselves from that. Our words are yea, yea, and nay, nay, not yea, nay. We strive to be honest and not crooked. But the crook, the scoundrel, through years of not doing the right thing, he becomes crooked. And we read that upon such a person will calamity and destruction come quickly. Now, I know I've had the privilege of learning the hard way that there are many, many crooks in this country. I think it was about 4 years or 5 years ago, I was walking down the street with Jonathan after having a meal at Mawar's, and this little gypsy girl came with big, doleful eyes, filled with earnest pleas, asking for £1. And there I was, feeling sorry for her, wanting to give her 50p. She stomped her foot and said, "No! £1! And I got duped, and I gave it. Because at times, we Christians are foolish in being tender-hearted. But of course, there are times when we have to show compassion. But at times, we have to be wise. Even a child of six is a scoundrel. And the reason why God hates the crooked man, and why the crooked man will receive judgment and destruction, is because God hates the root sins that give rise to such crookedness. And that's the second point. And here we take a look at the seven root sins of a proud look, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wickedness, feet that are swift in mischief, a false witness, and the sowing of dissension. But instead of dealing with every one of these sins individually, I will group them into three categories. Firstly, we have the sins of the soul. Secondly, the sins of the limbs. And thirdly, the sins of the lips. Now, firstly, we see the sins of the soul. And here we see pride. Now, what does Solomon call it? He calls it a proud look. Now, it has something to do with the eyes. So you might be asking, what does that have anything to do with the soul? Well, the eyes are the windows to the soul. A confidence man secures your confidence, and he cheats you. He thinks nothing of you. He looks down upon you. As verse 17 says, he has a proud look. Literally, he has lofty eyes. He has a haughty look. So he looks down upon you. You're not someone to be honored. You're someone that he can take advantage of. He will borrow money from you and not pay you back. He will take advantage of you in other ways and not feel in his conscience that he has done anything wrong. And the reason why God hates pride is because the proud don't see themselves as they really are, and hence they won't seek God. Now in Luke 18, Jesus told of the parable concerning the Pharisee and the publican, how the Pharisee praised himself in his prayer that he wasn't like the publican, but the publican pleaded for mercy from God. And he told this parable to point out the fact that the Pharisee was proud, and this pride prevented him from truly coming to God. And pride causes us to transgress even further against the Lord. And I hope you're familiar with the story of Uzziah in 2 Chronicles 26. And it talks about how he was filled with pride. It says in verse 16, "But when he was strong, his heart was lifted up to his destruction, for he transgressed against the Lord his God and went into the temple of the Lord to burn incense upon the altar of incense." Now, Uzziah was a king. He wasn't allowed to burn incense. It was the priest's job to do that. But he was proud. And the result of that, destruction befell him quickly. He got leprosy, and he spent the rest of his life locked up in his house. God hates pride. He will punish it. As Proverbs 16:18 says, "Pride goeth before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall." Now, the word haughty in Proverbs 16 is the same as the word that we see in Proverbs 6, a proud look. Here we also see, aside from a proud look, the sins of the soul also includes a heart that devises wicked imaginations. The check is in the mail. I've already mailed it out. Didn't I pay you already? The phrase wicked imaginations literally means thoughts of iniquity. And the human soul, his heart, is prone to thinking sinful thoughts. Matthew 15:19 says, "For out of the heart proceed evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, blasphemies." But you see, there's a difference between struggling with these sins and yielding control of them to Satan. We may be tempted to make excuses for ourselves, but do we fight against the scoundrel mentality, or do we give ourselves into it? And that's why it's important to control our imaginations, control our thoughts and our intentions, which is why 2 Corinthians 10, verse 5 says, casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalteth itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ. See, the scoundrel is in all of us. You may wake up late, God forbid, for your exams. You may be tempted to come up with a lie. Why you weren't on time for your exam. Oh, I twisted my leg. Oh, I hurt myself. Oh, my roommate stole my alarm clock. All these imaginations during the times when we are most urgent and most scared, we can cook up. But we must cast down imaginations and bring every thought into captivity. The question is this: what happens if we don't do anything to our evil thoughts? Very simple. We shall perform them. What happens in the soul will affect the limbs. And here we see the sins of the limbs. We see that feet will be swift in running to mischief. And people do that really quickly. We carry out what has already been designed in the heart. And this is more than just falling or sliding into sin, which is common to all of us. But here, feet which are quick to run to mischief shows that the execution of the sin is premeditated. We think of it. We perform it. Isaiah 59 verse 7 says, their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed innocent blood. Their thoughts are thoughts of iniquity, wasting and destruction are in their paths. You see, this shows the intent and how they are bent on sinning. And such an attitude God hates and will destroy. But not only will the feet act upon the attitude of the soul, the hands do as well. And here we see hands will shed innocent blood. Now we might ask, well, what is Solomon talking about? Shed innocent blood. I thought no one is innocent. Now the verse doesn't mean to say that there are truly innocent people around, for every one of us are guilty. But what the verse is referring to is the killing of those who are not guilty of shedding blood. So in other words, the verse here is not denying capital punishment, right? Those who kill unrighteously ought to be killed, but to kill those who have shed no blood, to kill those who are innocent is shedding innocent blood. Hope you understand, right? And the reason why God hates this is because it crosses into his domain. In other words, I was the innocent party. That scoundrel gypsy girl, right, was the one who used her hands to shed innocent blood. God is the judge here. And the reason why he hates this sin is because it crosses into his domain. We're reminded in James 4:11 not to judge one another because we make ourselves judges of the law rather than doers of the law. And you see, this is the root problem. The murderer ultimately is lawless in character, in his heart. Although our hands and feet can create a lot of problems, our tongues and lips can do much worse. And here we see the sins of the lips. We're told that God hates a lying tongue, a false witness that speaks lies, and he that sows discord among brethren. And these are very similar. A lying tongue is, well, simply a lying tongue. A false witness that speaks lies is to testify in a public court and to say something that is not true. And of course, the one who sows discord is one that uses what he says to bring ruin to the body of Christ. Well, here you have the general, which is a lying tongue. And you have the specific, which is telling lies in giving public testimony. And you have the result, which is discord among brethren. And the reason why God hates it is because it is contrary to his nature. Jesus said of himself in John 14:6, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes unto the Father but by me. And because God is truth, his judgment is always righteous. As Deuteronomy 32:4 says, he is the rock. His work is perfect, for all his ways are judgments. A God of truth and without iniquity, just and right is he. And God hates a lying tongue. He hates it very much so. Revelation 21:8 says, but the fearful and unbelieving and the abominable and murderers and whoremongers and sorcerers and idolaters and all liars shall have their part in the lake which burneth with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. Now, our sins will find us out eventually. And that's why many scoundrels, many crooks are caught. Many of us, I'm sure, we have experienced it ourselves. Have I allowed this crookedness within me at times to surface? Have I lied? Sure, plenty of times. And I'm sure we have as well. But our lies will find us out. Now, there's a true story of four high school boys who couldn't resist the temptation to skip morning class. And going out and having a drive, they came back about lunchtime and told the teacher that they were caught in a traffic jam, right? And not only that, but they had a flat tire. So much to their relief, she smiled and said, well, you missed a quiz this morning. So take your seats and get out a pencil and paper. And she sat them at four corners of the class. Still smiling, she waited as they settled down and got ready for her questions. Then she said, first question, which tire was flat? You see, our sins will eventually find us out. Our crookedness will find us out. If we keep on making excuses like the scoundrel, we will never be trusted again. If we are as murderous as the scoundrel, it shall be seen in our actions. So we ask ourselves this morning, firstly, how wise are we in identifying such people? And in one sense, I'm quite glad that God in his providence has allowed my wife and I to come to this country, because we are so, so sheltered where we are back home. And you see the extent of human depravity where the law is lax and people cheat one another. But how wise are we? And sometimes as Christians, we feel as if we have to be kind to every soul and give every soul the benefit of the doubt. And it's not wrong. There ought to be that. And we should not be overly suspicious, but we have to be most wise. And we turn the question upon ourselves as well. Are we in the habit of cheating other people? Are we in the habit of causing other people trouble because of our actions? Have we rejoiced in our smugness that we're able to get away with it? What are our hearts like? And let us remind ourselves that God hates this attitude, these seven deadly sins. Are there times we think evil of others and dwell upon these thoughts? Have we spoken lies and gossiped about others to destroy them, or perhaps even rejoiced in their misfortune? And have we slighted them in our dealings with them? So as much as we ask the Lord to help us to be wise, to identify, to be as wise as serpents, to stay away from danger, let us also turn the questions to ourselves and ask, are we honest people? Are we proud or humble people? What does the Lord require of us?